Welcome to Food Friends, a podcast inspiring home cooks to try new dishes in the kitchen by sharing trusted recipes, tips, and friendship. Hi, I'm Sonia.
And I'm Carrie. We met in Los Angeles over 15 years ago as personal chefs and haven't stopped talking about food since. We're so glad you're here. Sonia, this week we are re-releasing one of our very first episodes about frittatas, and I'm really excited to put this out there because this is a great time of year to be reminded of how delicious and easy a frittata is.
Yeah, this frittata really was life-changing, and I think it's worth re-listening to the specifics of what makes any old frittata truly exceptional, because frittatas can be bland and boring.
This frittata did change my life. This is like part of our friendship, right? You went away to a retreat, you experienced this frittata, and then you brought it back to me and we talked about it and we both got to learn something from that conversation.
And also, speaking of going away on retreats, we're taking a spring break. That's part of why we're re-releasing this episode. We think it's really important to take a break and recharge and regroup. We put so much into each episode. We love doing Food Friends. We love being with each other and we love hearing from all of you and connecting with all of you. And we're going to just take a little break, but we'll be back with brand new episodes next week.
Listen, I couldn't have said it better myself, and we're excited to re-release this.
Stay tuned to hear all about our life-changing frittata. Hi, good morning.
Good morning. It's been a minute. I'm so happy to see you. I'm so happy to catch up with you.
I feel like we never get enough days to talk.
No.
I'm really excited to catch up. So one thing that happened recently that of course made me think of you was I was helping a friend who was hired to chef a retreat. So I was like the sous chef or assistant to her, which is I kind of love. It's been a long time since I've been an assistant to someone, and it was just really fun. But anyway,
it's a nice break. Yeah. You don't have to be so responsible. You can just kind of like take it instructions. That kind of situation always reminds me of how much I just love cooking. Not all the other stuff, like the responsibility and the communication and all that. It's just like the joy of the cooking.
Yeah, that's right. You're just there to chop and clean and
oh, nice.
Arrange things, and it's you don't have to think a lot, so you kind of get in a zen state of just like doing the task. Yeah, it was sort of a real gift to be able to do that. And of course, whenever I'm cooking in any kind of retreat setting, I think of you. Carrie and I used to co-chef retreats together, and it was a way that we really became so much closer and started to really collaborate on food. And so I can't even be like cooking in any kind of cabin-like setting, nature-like setting without thinking of you. So it was that part was already special.
Really lovely.
Yeah.
Well, that takes me back to also I was pregnant, if you remember. I'm sure you remember that. I was pregnant and then Mac was like a newborn when we did those three retreats together. So that was a real wild time of my life. Being in that kitchen with you was such a beautiful safe space. You know, we worked so hard then, but we've had some of our best fights in those moments where we were really debating the merits of adding different ingredients to egg salad.
And I also just say one other weird side note that you'll appreciate. So this place is like this place that I went to is a space in the woods designed for retreat. So there's kind of like a main home structure, and there's a caretaker for the property. And that person was like the same person as the caretaker of the property where you and I did the retreat in Ojai. It was red-haired man with the same kind of warm, kind eyes and energy. Oh. And I was like, how did I get so lucky to have two retreats with two warm, kind, red-haired men?
That's a really funny synchronicity. I remember that. Oh, and we would like in the afternoons, we would go outside and eat our, you know, have our breaks and talk to him. And yeah, wow. What a cool thing.
It was a total synchronicity, as you said. Wow. Okay. So back to the retreat. There was this thing that Lauren Chandler, the chef, and my friend made that I've almost never in my life seen a reaction to food as I did to this thing that she made. So she made a frittata. And I don't think one necessarily ever thinks of frittatas as like a wow dish that everyone's going to lose their mind. eating. And
yeah, no, I was going to say, I think frittatas are, the frittatas that I've made in the past are always really beautiful, but I am always kind of like, it's fine.
It's fine.
You know, and listen, they're dishes I make. I put in all the things that I like, but I'm always like a little bit like not wowed with a frittata.
I think it's hard to be wowed by a frittata. I don't think there's anything wrong with them. I think they're wonderful. Like you said, they can be beautiful.
They serve a purpose.
They serve a purpose.
They're like a protein at a brunch or a lunch or whatever. Like they're a –
they're almost, again, like a casserole of the morning,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, a casserole of the morning.
So, all right. So she makes this frittata and I swear for a half an hour straight, because people are like come in and get their plates of food and come out. There's sort of like a staggered family style buffet brunch. All I'm hearing is, oh my God, this frittata. Oh my God, this frittata. What's in this frittata? Everyone's losing their minds.
Okay, wait, you got to tell me what's it. Wait, should we back before we go into, Amelia, we're going to leave a cliffhanger here. What's in the frittata? I think we have to define what a frittata is, mm-hmm. and like the difference between a frittata, what I grew up eating, which a casserole of the morning, we call it an egg casserole, but I've heard in fancier circles it called an egg strata, which is like eggs and some kind of bread baked together. There's a pasta frittata, which is similar to a kugel. It's eggs and noodles. But then there's also the quiche.
I would say there's the quiche.
A frittata is kind of like a crustless quiche.
I was just about to say. It's okay. Like I would call it a crustless quiche. I would call it a baked omelet. Yeah. I would call it just like a baked scrambled egg dish because it's not like shakshuka, which is a baked egg dish where you keep the eggs whole. Yes. This is really like scrambled.
Which belongs in this category, I think. Shakshuka, or one of my friends makes an egg curry, which is kind of which is kind of like shakshuka, but the eggs are fully cooked. Like you cook the eggs before they go in and then they kind of bubble in the – anyway, and you serve that with rice.
Yeah. Once you dive into the whole baked egg category, you find that there's a lot of different things. I think we're missing about, 20 or 30 dishes. But frittatas, stratas are very popular, especially in the United States. Like I don't know about all over the world, but they're very popular here. Okay. So to me, it's frittatas defined as like scrambled eggs of some kind and usually some kind of cream. Ideally. I'm just talking about traditionally.
I don't think so. I think that
I'm going to share with you.
I feel like cream is in a quiche. And when I've done frittatas, they're always just straight eggs and then some kind of vegetable. You can add meat if you want to.
I think like any recipe, like you're going to find versions with or without cream. And if you go with the crustless quiche definition, then it would have cream. But I agree with you. Not everyone makes frittatas with cream. And in fact, Lauren was telling me typically she never makes frittatas with cream or dairy. So to your point, I think it's very common to just make scrambled eggs and throw in some vegetables. Like you said, throw in some meat if you want sausage or something, or throw in some cheese, or even just keep it veggie and different mix. People do asparagus frittatas, leek frittatas, tomato frittatas. There's so many kinds.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you want to know?
I'm dying to know. What is the secret of this quiche this frittata that people are like really disgusting?
Lauren and I talked about it at length because I also ate the frittata and I was like, I cannot believe how good this is. So a couple things, and she's like, look, I never make it with cream, but this time she went and followed like traditional frittata ratios. So she went to some classic recipe. I don't know which one. I'm sure there's several good ones online or, Julia Child or someone. She found like the classic frittata ratio, however many eggs per person plus cream, a certain ratio of cream. That was step one. And she was like, it really makes a difference. Like who knew? Like the cream makes a difference.
Yeah, and then for me, part of the lure of a frittata is that it just like doesn't have rules. Like I just want to like throw, like if I have 5 people eating, if I have 10 people eating, I just want to like throw a bunch of eggs into beat them and then throw some vegetables in and throw some cheese on top and throw it in the oven.
But like you and I said, that's delicious and fine, but is that going to make everyone stop in their tracks?
No, you're right. You're right. So, okay, I'll shut up.
So the stop and no, because I don't disagree with you. I, like you, almost never add cream. I'm not looking at a recipe book. I'm throwing things in a pan and throwing them in the oven or even in a Pyrex. That's what I'm doing. So I agree with you. And yet then I had this kind of life-changing frittata. I'm like, oh, there's rules sometimes for a reason. And that's what Lauren and I together discovered, even though it was her doing, like we were in this process of discovery in the kitchen. So the other big secret, I think that's part of it. But to be fair, I think Lauren actually deserves more credit than she was giving herself, because there were two fundamental secret ingredients that changed the game for this. One was copious amounts of caramelized onion. And I mean copious, and I mean true caramelized onion, not browned onion. She took the time, 45 minutes or an hour, to take a boatload of onions and get them jammy and brown and translucent and caramelized. And she made it like days in advance, so that the morning of, she was just throwing it all together.
She made the onions days in advance. Those Correct. Were made ahead of time. And she took the time to really do them. And onions, eggs, great combination.
Okay, so the caramelized.
She caramelizes all these onions.
Caramelizes all these onions.
Just like a basic brown onion, basic white onion, or was it like a mix of onions? Did she use shallots? It was just like a basic onion.
I truly don't know, but from what I can tell, it was your standard white onion.
Okay.
Could have been red onion. I don't think it truly matters. I think what matters is that you're actually patiently caramelizing and not browning. And so then if you've ever made caramelized onions, you know, they're kind of gooey. They're
jammy. They're jammy. I like that word that you used. Yeah.
They're gooey. They're jammy. And they're very, very sweet. And you don't add any sweetness to them. What happens, the chemicals, the way it's released in the caramelization process, the sugars sort of are accentuated in the onion without getting into the food science of it. And you have this really sweet product. So, okay, eggs and sugar is actually something – it's very traditional in Japanese cooking. And
really?
Like if you think of in sushi rolls, like tamago or you know.
Okay.
So yeah, in Japanese cooking, it's very traditional to add sugar to eggs and to even add it to egg salad. Like traditional egg sandos have a little sugar added to the egg salad.
Really?
Eggs. Yes. The natural sweetness of the caramelized onions, you could really taste it. You tasted more sweetness than onion flavor in this frittata. Secret ingredient.
So this was secret ingredient number one. And there's another secret ingredient?
There's another secret ingredient that blew my mind.
I'm on the edge of my chair right now.
Tarragon.
Oh.
Tarragon.
Wow.
Fresh tarragon.
Like a lot of tarragon?
A lot of fresh tarragon and a lot of.
Cooked in or put on top?
Cooked in. So what she did, she took a lot of fresh herbs, like a ton of parsley. I think we had basil on hand. I couldn't even tell you. I don't think it matters. I think you could use dill. I think you could use scallions. I think
you're always
use...
looking for more reasons to put dill into things.
Dill goes in everything for me, but that's because I'm from Ukraine in my lineage, where dill is king, the king of herbs. No, I think you could use any herbs on hand, but if you wanted to play it safe and be true to this Lauren Chandler recipe, you would probably stick to parsley and tarragon. And I don't know what it did, but it did something magic. Oh, and then the last thing that I know she added was a very generous amount of white cheddar cheese, which just melted. You couldn't even tell there was cheese in it because it was like just cut really thin and small and just layered into the eggs and all.
It was just like salty and umami into that whole mixture of cream and eggs and cheese. I mean, that sounds outrageous. And then the brightness of the herbs is probably – so those herbs were all cooked in.
Yeah, like added to the – so when you scramble the eggs and then you add the cream. And we're not talking about a crazy amount of cream, but – again, ratios. You add the caramelized onion, you add the cheese, and then you add in like handfuls of finely chopped herbs, and you whisk that all together, and then you pour it into your cast iron or into your Pyrex or whatever oven-proof baking dish.
It's basically you've created a batter, an egg batter, because that's not at all how I do a frittata. I usually start my cast iron and I saute vegetables, and then I pour the eggs in. So what you're saying is like basically everything is assembled ahead of time. You create this batter, and then do you pour the batter into the cast iron cold?
Or is
the cast iron – that's a detail I want to know.
I'll have to go back and ask, but I would say that I don't pour – I mean, I've done it both ways, to be fair, actually. I've poured in frittata batters into cold baking dishes, and I've done it in hot cast irons. I think it must get a little more browned if it's hot, but it works either way.
Because at that point, you don't have to be married to cast iron, which I think not everybody has cast iron.
No, nope.
You know, but everybody has like a Pyrex or
a casserole
some kind of casserole dish of any kind. I feel like that's kind of like a real standard.
Really heat up in advance, right? Like you don't.
No.
Yes. So you would just fill up your Pyrex. Now, I don't know what Lauren did. I'll have to double check and report back. Maybe we'll add it to some show notes. But the point is, there's about 4 trillion frittata recipes online. And I think if you want to find like the baking temperature, the length, all of those are going to be pretty consistent. But I think the ingredients, like what you're adding, that is actually what mattered the most here.
Yeah, listen, I think as someone who didn't experience this frittata, I think what I would be looking for, if you're going to go back and talk to Lauren, I want to know what was the recipe that she used, the ratio recipe. Was it from Julia Child? I'd love to see that in the show notes because I want to know. I want to have a life-changing frittata in my life.
Oh, yeah. You know, we all need one.
We all need a life-changing frittata. But also, like, is tarragon – I feel like I can mostly get it here in California most of the time, but her tarragon was fresh, right? So dried tarragon.
We're not using dried tarragon. Typically, it is seasonal. Like here, you can only get the farmer's market sort of spring through fall.
Or summer. Okay.
Yeah, we can't get it. I've never seen it in the winter. But I have seen it in the winter in the market, like in the supermarket or at Whole Foods or, you know, here we have New Seasons. I don't think it's always the easiest herb to find, but it typically is in those fresh herb clamshells that you find in the grocery store. And if you can grow a little tarragon or get your hands on some at a farmer's market, it's obviously great. I would say even if for some reason you can't find any tarragon anywhere, like I think the caramelized onion may be enough to really and I would even play around with other fresh herbs. I think part of it is just having a strong fresh herb. Like my ex-stepmother actually made a really delicious frittata when she came to visit me this past year, and she added fresh oregano to hers. And it was delicious. It was so good.
I would never think to add fresh oregano because I feel like that can be so intense.
I would never have added fresh oregano either. And I have to say it was so delicious. And I think it was like she didn't add too much, but she added enough that it gave – I think there's something about strong tasting fresh herbs, oregano, tarragon, a basil, right? Any of those herbs – something with the eggs, like it really brings out the flavor of the herbs or marries well.
So the look of the frittata was there. You have sort of the golden color of the eggs, but then they're speckled with green. Mm-hmm. And then is it speckled with like the darkness of the of
tiny? The, yeah, a little bit.
Tiny bits.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess like I think I really my sort of visual of a frittata is like a Baragas frittata, right? Mm-hmm. It's like – it's golden with like big pieces of green in it. And then usually I feel like an asparagus frittata or a spinach frittata I'm always putting goat cheese. That's my goat cheese is always my a chev is always kind of my go-to or a feta.
I think say that's feta, a nice one. Yeah.
Like chunks of white and chunks of green in this golden baked. But yeah, I guess to your point, it's like, I want to go and experience this. The thought of a frittata is a lot sexier than the reality of it for me. I'm always like, oh, I'm so interested in this and how great I get to use my cast iron and the photograph of it and the laying it out onto a buffet. It's always such a wowed dish. And then it's always like, I'd rather eat the potatoes.
I agree. So, but I was going to also bring up because – Lauren's frittata made me think of your morning egg casserole or egg strata. Man. So
I grew up eating what was referred to as just egg casserole where I'm from. And the basic idea is that you've got some day old bread and you just kind of tear it up roughly. I mean, you can make it into little cubes if you wish to, but we would just kind of tear it up roughly, lay it into a casserole dish. And then there is a ratio, which over the years I've just gotten lazy in my application of, but it's like a dozen eggs, a couple cups of milk. You add a little bit of dried mustard, which adds kind of just like gives it another layer of flavor, salt and pepper.
Like a hidden tanginess that you can't really taste.
Yeah, it just elevates it a little bit, which I think there were a couple of times when I forgot it and I noticed. Mm. It was just like more – it was just really bland. A lot of times my family would put in browned sausage, pre-cooked sausage, and then cooled. It's really like a complete meal. It's sort of like the idea of like scrambled eggs, sausage, and toast, and then a lot of cheese on top. And in some ways, you know, it's funny that you remember it from that retreat. One of the things that came out of that retreat for me was it was a group of people. We offered all kinds of additional condiments. And one of the things that came out of that for me was adding tapatio to the top of that casserole, egg casserole, which just changed, it just like up-leveled it for me in like a way that I had never experienced before.
Oh, so good.
And now, this wasn't also something I did before, but now whenever I eat baked macaroni and cheese, uh-huh. I always add like a tapatio, you know, or Cholula on top of that, and just elevates it. It's almost like you need to break up that real cheesy richness with something that's vinegary. Because I also don't like it with sriracha, which I like sriracha as a hot sauce, but it doesn't do the same thing as like those vinegary Frank's Red Hot.
And it's also not too vinegary. Like it isn't Tabasco, which is heavy vinegar. It's like very chili forward, but with that note of acidity and that brightness. It does so well. Wait, but can we back up? Because I haven't made your egg casserole in a long time. I remember there were a few like really important things that make it a smart dish for when you have people over, like let's say you're hosting a brunch, or let's say you have family staying at your house and you want to have like an easy breakfast. So I remember you making them the night before.
You have to make it the night before. That's kind of the most brilliant part of it. And that's where I think it really is such a popular dish in the Midwest. And in a crowd of families, I had clients that they called it a breakfast strata. But that was their like Christmas morning. They would assemble it a day or two ahead of time. And then when you wake up on Christmas morning and everyone's unwrapping gifts, you can just throw it into the oven and like an hour later, it's ready to go. And, you know, I've definitely used the egg casserole, like if we've gone on vacation with another family or something, you make it the night before, put it in the fridge overnight, and then just pull it out and bake it. And like in an hour, the whole house smells delicious.
So it's like, so it's the torn up bread, and then you whisk up the eggs with some milk, and then you pour it over the bread. And if you've nuzzled like in some sausage, you can do that. Or you can just top cheese.
Yes. And you can nestle cheese in, or you can put cheese on top.
Okay.
You can do it both ways. I realize I don't actually like bacon in it. The bacon gets kind of flabby, you know. Mm-hmm. It's sausage is a much better use of that, but I'm not a sausage lover, so I generally make it vegetarian.
And then you could always like stick a sheet pan of bacon in the oven and have it
as
a side.
What I do. Yes. Yeah. I do a sheet pan of bacon on the side.
If I ate bacon, I would do that. That makes sense to me.
Yes.
But I loved it just with cheese and egg, I mean, and bread, and then topped with hot sauce. Like that to me with a little side of fruit was heaven in the morning.
It's kind of perfect. Yeah. Cause it's a little bit of carb. It's a little bit of protein. It's a little bit of cheese, which kind of makes it feel not sad. Like it's, you know, it's like the cheese adds, especially if you're, my instinct is always to add like a really sharp cheddar. I don't love like a mozzarella in this cause I don't think it's really, it doesn't add enough flavor, but there have been times when I've done like a fontina, when I've made it kind of an Italian one where it's like fontina and Parmesan, and that's nice.
Do you have to take the crust off the bread when you're cubing it?
It depends on which kind of bread you're using. So if you're using like a almost like a Wonder Bread or something like that, you know, there's not a lot of crustiness, but I typically buy like a sourdough loaf. And so if you've got something that's really crusty on the outside, a baguette is a great place. If you've got like a day old baguette that you kind of can't really get, you know, at that point it's kind of dried out or whatever, that's perfect. Because part of the great thing about this dish is that it does need, like, you're not going to make it the day of. Generally speaking, for at least the way we've used it is for a breakfast dish or a brunch dish. And you need more time than even if you were to get up at 6 a.m. and make it, it needs to sit and soak for a while. That's part of like the lure is that it all sticks to, it is like a casserole. It's like a, it's very uniform in that texture.
And you want that dry bread that's going to absorb liquid because fresh bread won't absorb liquid as much as a drier bread.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And this isn't where you're looking to like showcase a fancy some kind of fancy bread that's like crusty and whatever. It's like you really want it to be this really soft, comforting, almost like a mac and cheese. The idea of like a mac and cheese where everything's really soft.
Yes. You know? Well, I love this. I feel like also like there can never be enough like crowd-pleasing brunch dishes in our repertoire, agreed, right? Like agreed. There are just times when you need to feed a crowd or want to feed a crowd. And the other thing I think about both these dishes, both a frittata and a strata or egg casserole is like, it really can be a lunch dish. You could gussy it up and make it a dinner dish because it's really savory and flavorful. And like you said, a complete meal. It really works at different times of day.
I have a good question for you because I grew up with the egg casserole, a quiche wasn't really something that I ate a lot of until, but do you have a go-to quiche that you like?
It's funny you say that because I actually grew up eating a fair amount of quiche. I feel like it was really popular in the 80s and 90s to make quiche, don't you? It was just like a thing people did.
I mean, it wasn't where I was from.
Really? Okay.
People ate the egg casserole. But yeah, I do think that there's – when I think of a quiche, I think of like Williams-Sonoma. You know, it feels like that very – it feels fancy to me. It's like it's French. It's
Yes, obviously quiche is traditionally French. The word itself is French. I don't know.
I think of like a quiche Lorraine. Is it a quiche Lorraine?
Yes, quiche Lorraine is French like, with ham and cheese, ham, right?
Right.
We, of course, didn't eat pork growing up and we were not French. And I never thought of quiche as fancy. I just thought of it as like egg vegetable pie. Like usually it had like a lot of spinach and I think feta or some kind of cheese like that and egg. That was like the kind of quiche we grew up eating. And I know a lot of friends across the country who also had similar. And I don't know if this is a Jewish community thing. I imagine it could be true for lots of communities. But there are like a lot of my Jewish friends growing up, everyone has their own like especially spinach quiche. And maybe it's because it's such a great holiday food. There's a lot of rules in Judaism about like you can't actually cook on the Sabbath, but you can warm things up, or you can't cook on certain holidays, but you can keep things warm. So quiche is one of those things that really works as like a lunch on a Sabbath kind of meal. Yeah. But anyway, we grew up with quiches. And then I think maybe because I didn't love them growing up, something about the buttery crust actually isn't what I want with my eggs. Like bread is what I want with my eggs, if this makes sense. Pastry is not really what I want with my eggs, my personal palate. So I don't make a ton of quiche.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. As we're having this conversation, it really reminds me of there is a girl here that she makes what she calls greens pie. Her name is Danielle Bell. She has a catering company called Depores with her partner. And he cooks and she cooks and they're partners in life and in business. But she makes this – she's from Kentucky. And so she has this sort of southern take on – I don't think she would describe it as a quiche, but it's like this – incredibly buttery pastry and then a very heavy greens filling, which I'm guessing has some egg in it and then a lot of cheese. I would prefer that. I mean,
it
would take her greens pie over almost anything in life. It's really decadent and wonderful.
I had the great fortune of trying it.
Yes.
Yes, you gave it to me as a gift on one visit, and it was so incredible.
But it's not eggy, right?
No, I wouldn't call that a quiche. I would call that a greens pie, similar to a spinach pie. And I've actually seen versions of that with like a lot of cheddar, like spinach and cheese, like in like a pre-made pie crust. Like I've seen people do that. And some people call it spinach pie and some people call it quiche. I guess who cares, right? What tastes good? And like,
well, I guess like the question when you're talking about a quiche or a greens pie, the thing that I find the most fascinating experience of Danielle's pie in particular is that no part of that crust is soft. The crust itself is such an achievement. And I find that generally speaking, like if you go to like a French restaurant and have a quiche, the bottom part of that crust is always like really soft or worse than soft.
You know, soggy bottom.
It's soggy bottom. And I don't like a soggy bottom at all. And that's a thing that I always, every time I eat Danielle's pie, I just sit there and I'm like, how does she do this? I just still don't know how. And I honestly don't care. I don't need to make her greens pie. I just want her to make it.
We've solved the root problem of quiches. If it's a soggy bottom quiche, it's not for us.
Don't bring and your soggy bottom quiche to my brunch.
Beware, people.
Beware. Yeah.
Well, this is another fun, illuminating conversation.
I'm willing to really think differently about the ratios. And, you know, I guess in some ways I would just call it my own laziness. It's like, I just don't like to measure things. I don't like to pay attention to ratios. And for me, I've always thought like a frittata is just this thing you kind of throw together. And clearly your friend Lauren, all of the thought that she put into it has really revealed a next level frittata that
she unlocks
is undeniable in what you're describing with the oohs and ahs of the people eating it.
And we'll definitely link Lauren in the show notes so you can find out more about what she does. She's also an amazing cooking instructor as well as a chef. So, and I will follow up with her to add some notes about the ratio and the original recipe. Okay, so before we go, you know, I want to ask you, do you have a favorite bite of food from this week?
Okay, so I think that my favorite bite of food this week was I made a bolognese. Mm-hmm. Or I should say I had made bolognese a few weeks ago and I froze it and then I pulled it out one night when we didn't have a plan. There was nothing, there was no plan and there was no food in the house. And it was such a decadent, I was really thanking myself for pre-planning that. Mm-hmm. And it was I really like that Marcella Hazan recipe. I just think it's so delicious.
Yeah, she's a legend. Essentials of Italian Cooking is, I think, a must have for everyone's bookshelf.
I don't have that book. Can you believe that?
Yeah, well, we'll have to change that.
We'll have to talk about your collection is so next level. You have such a great cookbook collection.
I'm a little bit of a cookbook nerd. Yes. So bolognese, I feel like, would have been my favorite bite of the week had I had that.
What was your – did you have a favorite bite of the week?
I did. It's kind of an unexpected answer, I think. So I had my nieces visiting, and they're just about 8 years old, and the younger one is 5 and a half. And I wanted to make – we'd been eating kind of a lot of treats, you know, over the weekend. And so I wanted to make a really nourishing meal. Mm-hmm. And so I roasted up some Japanese sweet potatoes with just a few like mild spices, nothing spicy. And I made tacos with them, like Japanese sweet potato tacos.
Oh my gosh. Wait, I have to know more. Did you use corn tortillas or flour tortillas? Okay.
So I think I gave the girls an option to have flour and they chose flour. I had mine with corn.
Okay.
And I think Jonathan had both.
So just roasted. And then what did you put in them?
Really good guacamole, shredded lettuce, shredded iceberg.
Oh, you love iceberg.
I love iceberg. I love iceberg in a taco. I love iceberg, period. I'm a huge fan.
Yeah, but if you're going to use iceberg in a taco, why wouldn't you just use some romaine?
Because I didn't have romaine. I also wouldn't want romaine in taco. I want iceberg or I want thinly sliced cabbage.
Romaine is the same as
iceberg.
Not
to me. Not to me.
Oh my gosh. It's like the same application.
Not to me. It doesn't taste the same. It texturally feels different. I don't know. For me, iceberg is like so specific. Anyway, I can't remember all the little things. We had like little fixings. I had made some flavorful rice. We had a little beans. But it was really those sweet potato tacos. And the girls loved them. Like loved
them. Was there anything creamy in there?
The guacamole was really creamy. The guacamole. Creamy. Yeah.
Right. Okay. All right.
They were plant-based tacos that had
– great.
And it was just like scrounging up stuff I had in the fridge because I just didn't want to go to the store. Oh, and lime, like a good squeeze of lime.
A squeeze of lime. That's nice.
It honestly was so
lime
simple.
Lime and sweet potato is so – it's like a great combination. It really elevates that flavor.
Like it was a really unexpected hit with the kids because I wasn't sure they would like that. But I also just have been really into the purple Japanese sweet potatoes, like purple on the outside, white on the inside.
Right, right.
They have a different flavor and they have a different texture. They're a little drier.
Yeah,
and
they're more like a potato than they are like a root vegetable.
Yes.
Good. I'm going to have to look for those. those and see if I can find them. Do you buy yours at the farmer's market?
No, I get them.
Or do you get them at the grocery store?
Yeah, I get them at the grocery store, and they're pretty. Well,
I'm officially starving.
Why are we always so hungry? Always. I'm so hungry.
We talk about food for 40 minutes. I mean, it's, you know, and our recipes, and I feel like I have a purpose moving forward to try this frittata, to really caramelize my onions, to source some tarragon, and to make this frittata, and like, it feels like it has the potential to change my life.
I'm really excited for you to try it. I want you to take pictures and let us all know what happens.
Okay. It's a deal. All right. Have a lovely rest of your week.
You too. Bye. Right,
bye. Thanks for being our food friend.
If you enjoyed our podcast, please subscribe, leave us a review, and share this episode with friends. We love hearing from you, so follow us on Instagram or drop us a line at foodfriendspodcast.com.
Yes, we'd love to hear from you and your food friends. Happy cooking and eating!